Join sovereignindependence.com radio on icradionetwork.com every Monday at 7 p.m. UK time. Breaking the truth.
Take care,
Vicky.
All right.
Thank you, and thank you for telling people.
United Strike Radio. We have been live. This is just like being behind the scenes at a concert, everybody. You just got to get that feeling, meeting and greeting, talking to everybody. Thank you again for listening. Thank you, Vicky Barker. Did an excellent job there with Mike Chambers catching us up on foreclosure gate fraud. And in this next segment, we also have someone who knows all about fraud. Matter of fact, this is the man who knows where the money is. We're going to have Clint Richardson of the CorporationNation.com. Welcome, President Clint.
Oh, sorry, I still can't help laughing at that, but hello.
I know, I don't even vote, and I'm already giving you the highest office, and I can't think of anybody better to interview you than someone who's also into uncovering fraud and mining incidents, and is really a great host on Oracle Broadcasting, our buddy Hal Anthony from Behind the Woodshed.
That wasn't
Come out from behind that woodshed.
Hello. That's not very presidential.
Yeah, Hal, I think I've got you beat.
Well, yeah, hey, no, not just mining issues, all property issues. Remember, mining law underpins all property rights. And what Vicky Barker is experiencing is across this country. And what there's also a deception going on, because what the mortgages and even the investments are sitting above, they're a layer of legalism above the actual land, which hardly anybody actually addresses. And at some point, I'll be happy to hear that someone went back to the patent that issued from the government and said, wait a minute, you can't, that's why you can't take my property. All you can do is deal with me civilly on an obligation that you have right to collect. So fascinating stuff within the law, if we would just get back to it. I think we've been duped on a lot of things, and we've been miseducated. And I think, Clint, again, as we left last month, you then sprung it on us that you were going to be the president. We didn't cover it. We'll cover it this hour. But you were your claim to fame, or what gets you into the arena here, is that you exposed, or clarified actually, what the CAFRS is, the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report System, is about, and where the money, so-called, is in this nation, and that that's a big fraud upon the people about the fact of money and where it is, and the extent of the government involvement with these corporations and the shell game that goes on.
Yes, that is seems to be my only thing I do anymore, really. Well, let's pick off where Vicky just left off, and let's take a look at what government owns in Walmart stock. So if you're asking why Walmarts are popping up, why in a town of 2,000 people a mega super duper Walmart is popping up, you have to understand what the government's interest in that is, and what the local government's interest in that is, and what we find is that when I pull up, let's say, the New York State Pension Fund holdings in Walmart, I said, oh, I still have to laugh at this, because it's just, you know, everything's so different than what we thought. Walmart Stores Incorporated for New York pensions, and this is just one of the pension funds in New York, they have 7,655,000 shares at a market value as of 2010 of $425 million. That's almost half a billion dollars in Microsoft stock. You know, what more do you need to know? And then they have Walmart de Mexico. So even in Mexico, these Walmarts are the number one corporation in in South America. 232,000 shares at a value of $1.1 million. I can then go to just about any other holdings report, and in the top 20 or so holdings, I'll find Walmart. For instance, I can find Walmart. Let's see here. Here's the Georgia Teachers Retirement Pension Fund with $4,545,000 shares at a market value of $218 million. And then I go over to the Georgia Employees Retirement System Pension Fund, and I see 1.2 million shares at a value of $62 million. So everything that Vicky said is absolutely correct. The only thing that people aren't connecting with, I think, is that government has such a massive controlling stock interest in the company, and it is deciding where these corporations go. I mean, if you go, let's face it, all roads lead to the to a strip mall, and in every strip mall is every, you know, yeah, some people find it comforting that, that if you go 20 miles away, you're probably going to find another Walmart, another Home Depot, another, but if you look at the government, they own these corporations through stock investment. It is the biggest conflict of interest you can have, and this answers the question why these Walmarts are popping up everywhere and destroying our lives.
Well, you know, as you talk about that, I'm reminded of the stories we heard that Walmart had preferential discussion over there in China to actually push a bunch of things in, and they were able to force the price force the price that they bought, and because they forced the price that they got, they were actually to push other corporations down. And so here we have one of the biggest investment discussion in the world going working through
I see that you're talking, but I don't seem to have a connection right now.
Okay, you're on, though. If you can hear me, then you're on. Okay, but can you hear me now? Okay, I'm going to just carry on here. Yeah, as I was going on, I noticed that Walmart was able to actually control other nations, other corporations because of their buying power. And they were actually to dictate to lesser corporations. And when you find out this conflict of interest construction behind the scenes of the corporate authorities, you find out that they have the power to be able to dictate to other corporations their existence. And you understand then maybe why, with the government backing, why and how the... I hope all this is going not going on. Can't be quite tell it. I hear lots of noises, folks. But anyway, why they can go on and push on when they have the blessing of the government essentially to control other corporations? Then people that are invested in the system in the stock market, then what you have and you hear and you see is that, and especially as you pointed out that then the CAFR in your video, you know, Corporation Nation, people can see. I guess get copies of that at CorporationNation.com or freely downloaded at other places. You start seeing that the jurisdictions of the government, the cities, of the towns, the counties, all the offices, they're all invested in these certain particular investment accounts and corporations, which are actually in control of the rest because they can control who they do business with. And so if you don't do what they want you to do, as Walmart clearly showed, then you also don't have a seat at the table to make your money.
Yeah, you know, I apologize. I missed probably the first half of what you said. I have a little connection problem. I hope you guys can hear me.
Yes, we can.
Okay, good. I'm now talking.
All I was saying was that this backing behind the government of Walmart, making it so big, also allowed it to control other corporations through its buying, and then that actually starts to control the stock market, and then you start seeing who the governments are investing in these CAFR portfolios, which are specific special corporations, which essentially control the portfolio and then therefore control the rest of the corporations through who they deal with.
Absolutely. And see, one of the things I'm pointing out heavily in my documentary that I keep trying to finish but seem to keep going is that government actually owns the company Diebold. It owns the company Halliburton. It owns the company Roche, which was Donald Rumsfeld's company that he had so much stock in and was working for. So you don't have to wonder why things happen. You know they're happening because government owns the company. It is passing the laws and regulating the industries in which it owns the companies that are participating. And there's a very good reason why you or me can't really get a foothold in the corporate structure, and that is because, one, we're not offering a public stock that government can buy up, and two, we're slaves who aren't supposed to get to that point. You don't have that option. You know, anybody that thinks that Mark Zuckerberg is controlling Facebook, it has got to be an absolute moron. I mean, really, they make a movie out of it to make you think that that's a that's just a private thing, and it's just such a traumatic thing, and good for him for holding on to it. No, no, no. He owns that as much as Bill Gates owned Microsoft. It just doesn't work that way. The way things work is that government is the controlling interest. If it wasn't, the company just wouldn't succeed like these Fortune 500 companies have. It's simple as that.
Well, that's sure. Once you see how this thing's tied together, it's hard to conceive how they could be, how they could actually operate independent of the system. And then, as I've always pointed out, what we're looking at worldwide in the UN, this UN declared war, this IMF declared war, the bankers declared war, is a financial construct coming by different names. And so when you see that this is a financial construct and the products of things of private agencies like the Federal Reserve, and then the system that comes from that, like all these so-called mortgages, which are actually investment contracts and dealt with under a completely different set of laws, that you start seeing how this whole thing is just, no matter where you touch it, you become tied in and pulled in to a control structure. And So in looking at that, the only way that we can address that, it seems to me, and has seemed to me, was what Karen Quinn Tostado started in her phrase, don't buy, don't comply, ask why. Don't buy into this and step back, withdraw from it, and don't put your energy into something. It's a parasite that feeds off of us. And that's partly it sounds kind of trite to not buy at Walmart anymore, but the bottom line is when you contribute to any of these big corporations, you're contributing to the government that's trying to control you and bring you down, bring you low, like we've seen in Vicky Barker's case in the housing and all the other houses. She's one of thousands across this country where the government doesn't care about us, and they allow us to enter into these things, and you see the courts are really there to protect the government's interest.
Yes, courts are definitely private corporations. We've proved that without a doubt through Freedom of Information Acts, where the judge owns the court and rents it out to the city for ridiculous amounts of money, and they're not there for law, they're there for corporate code. So we know that. What I really try to get people to understand, and this is, you know, I feel very fortunate to have been enlightened to this point by people like Walter Burian, and through my own research, you know, it's just come to me, and it just makes sense now that all of these corporations, if you just consider government, even though it's 230,000 different governments across the United States, federal, local, state, and all that, if you just consider it one extremely large entity, a collective government, like if you had a bucket of sand and you dumped it out, each one of those little sand granules would be a different government. But really, they're all one bucket of sand. Doesn't really matter who we think or you know, we can speculate all we want on who that elite is that's really controlling it, but it doesn't really matter because it is a weapon. Now, what I want people to understand most of all is that companies like Walmart are weapons. They are not corporations per se. They are arms of the government. So I guess really what it boils down to is that government is using Walmart. Government is using all these other stores and companies and banks and everything else because they have that power of ownership. They have the proxy vote to decide who the board of directors is, and then the board of directors, of course, decides who the CEO of the corporation is. So just like Osama bin Laden or Saddam Hussein, if he stops cooperating with the government, government's going to knock him out. Well, it's the same thing with these corporate leaders. I mean, if Bill Gates all of a sudden grew a heart and stopped caring about depopulation, government would not be happy, and they would get rid of him. He would have an untimely accident, and we'd have a new CEO of Microsoft. So when we're talking about banks, again, I have to make you understand, banks are not operating independently. And, you know, through my research now, I just pulled up the 536-page comprehensive annual financial report for the Federal Reserve. Now, understand that the CAFR, this Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, literally is the audit of the Federal Reserve. Anything you can want to know, from what gold is worth to how much gold the Fed has, how many certificates for gold that the Fed has, I should say, which the Treasury holds, I mean, it's amazing the information in there. It's everything you could possibly want to know from 1917 all the way, or 1915 actually, I think, all the way up to now. It's all there, everything you want to know. And this is what people need to start looking at, because the government is not going to tell you about it, but it offers it to you. So when I look at, again, back to New York Holdings list for the pension fund, I see J.P. Morgan Chase & Company, and I see that New York Pension, just one of the pension systems in New York, has 15.4 million shares of J.P. Morgan Chase & Company at a value, a market value in 2010 of $689.2 million. So, of course, it's going to be in the best. I can find Bank of America, I can find Wells Fargo, all always in the top 10 listings, these companies. And so, again, consider the banks just a weapon of communism, a weapon of the government, to where, I mean, you know, they're using these banks, you know, to foreclose and gain your property in what they're calling a legal way, because they passed the laws that allow these banks, which they own, to take your home. It's a vicious circle. It's a massive conflict of interest, and it is literally communism. There's no other word for it. Fascism, communism, whatever you want to call it.
Another video on the internet. It's an ism. You were talking about the collective grains of sand, but that the collective is a communism, communes are not too bad on their face, but it's when a political communism is just another tool of a control. But the collective grains, that's a corporation. These are we can readily see with GM. Let's say they had a lot of divisions. Well, each one of those divisions could have been another nation underneath a common control. The common control in this regard is financial construction, the medium with which we exchange our labor, if that is such. And so we've been told that there is no sovereignty in the nations anymore. Any G20 nations are not a sovereignty, which means that is a collective. It is just a corporation, and you're under the corporate governance structure, and this is a global thing. So everybody, like United We Strike, is global. This is an international war against all people. And so this is not a small thing just local to the United States, which I find it. And you're talking about being able to use things and people to the benefit of the government as tools. Well, you know, they're even using, you know, Osama's been dead, and even in death he's still cooperating with the government. They just drag up anything that they want in order to put forward whatever they need to do in order to get the minds and hearts of people to act. And this is another thing, that critical thought, hopefully, if you can start to do that, if you aren't so jaded about the lack of real knowledge that you have, if the vaccines worked and you can't think for yourself, if you're clueless, then there's no help. But for those of us that are thinking, when we start looking at all this again, you start finding out that these it's one story after the next, all hiding what you've exposed at one facet of this gem darkly lit that controls our lives. It's a phenomenal control that they have over people's minds, and it's a phenomenal release to see when you see this. Like, that's what I was saying to you about your Corporation Nation video. You are able to put in some more simple terms, in ways people can understand how this thing is, so that people can actually see that these aren't different, separate entities. These are really all one big amoeba that are enveloping the globe and essentially using people as a host for their activities, and the people have to simply just pull themselves away. And in answer to that, they just have to simply pull away. Now, it's not quite so simple, but it is that simple too.
Well, you know, one interesting thing is state of Massachusetts. I was just talking to Walter the other day, and he was telling me, you know, someone had asked him they couldn't find their comprehensive annual financial report for their county. And he couldn't figure out where they all went, because, you know, he's looked up Massachusetts plenty of times. And apparently at some point, and I don't know when, if it was recent or a long time ago or what, but Massachusetts no longer has counties. Massachusetts is a commonwealth, and that's the only thing we can think of. And now it is just a state with cities. And I found that extremely frightening, because that means the state took all of the assets of each county, understanding that each city is its own individual corporation. The county is sort of the its own corporation, but it's kind of the, I don't know, what would you call it, the babysitter of the cities, and then the state is the babysitter of the counties. Well, there's apparently there are no longer technically business entities that are called counties anymore in Massachusetts, so it almost sounds as if they're sort of moving ahead with a an even more central takeover. I don't know. I haven't really studied it yet, but I found that interesting. Now, I have a comment here that says, some say that the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report is not a liquid entity. I mean, in other words, it cannot be, you cannot sell what's in the CAFR and get the money. I wish that were the case. basically, what you have in the CAFR, for instance, I mean, I can go back to my, this is a very handy little report I have from New York, just to let you know what's in the report. It is not only stock investments, and these are listed as stocks that are, the ones I just read to you, these are listed as stocks that are held outright by the pension fund corporation. Okay, so yes, very much so, those are liquid assets. They can be sold at any time. In fact, when you read into the CAFR, if you're crazy enough and nutty enough to actually read these things like I am, you'll find that they threaten corporations through corporate governments, which is the voting process we were talking about earlier, the proxy voting, where they vote for mergers and acquisitions. So government actually threatens these companies that if they don't do what government wants, and that's the collective vote from government, then they will liquidate those stocks. So very much are these things liquid. Now, the other important thing that I think a lot of people miss is that also listed in these reports is the real estate holdings of each government. So I look and I see that, for instance, New York has real estate holdings, outright ownership of real estate in just about every city in America. Every state, not city, but and every fund or international fund that also holds real estate holdings, and then even holdings that are out of country. So then you add on top of that, we you know, since they got rid of the Glass-Steagall Act, you know, banks and investment companies can now be, they can loan money. So an investment corporation like a pension fund can actually loan that money out. So what you have are pension funds that are loaning money out to their employees and to other people in the form of a mortgage. And so I look and I see massive amounts of mortgages that are held by these pension funds and other governments, meaning that they own that property too. If that property doesn't get paid, guess what? The mortgage holder, which is the pension fund, the government, is going to foreclose on the property and they're going to own that property. So they are first lien holder on all those mortgages too. Of course, the next thing is foreign currency. All governments are hedging the dollar at all times. They have investments in all foreign currencies. The reason for that is why anyone would invest in a foreign currency. A lot of people say invest in gold. I, however, if I were to invest in something that would take me over if I knew an emergency was coming in America and I wanted to keep the value of my money, I would invest in a foreign currency somewhere where all of whatever happens to America, you know, wouldn't affect their particular monetary unit. So what we have, and there's more, there's alternative investments, there's energy investments, there's emerging markets like China and, you know, all these South American countries, African countries. They're investing, they're building up the third world. They're building up China. China has over $14 trillion of American investments in it. Okay, all the products that are made in China that go into Walmart, they're made by American companies who have their manufacturing plants over in China. It's not like we're just buying these random products from China. No, these are American and European products that are being made in China, and they're polluting the heck out of China's air and water in the process because our laws here do not allow it. So
you know, of course, that's where Walmart comes in, and that's where Home Depot and all these stores that sell all these Chinese, Guatemalan, Mexican products. So, again, it's a very, very understandable system when you understand where the ownership in these corporations lies, and you understand why all of our jobs are gone, why all these products are coming from foreign countries instead of America. Well, heck, I can use poison in my baby milk in China. I can put radioactive talc or whatever they use in my building materials over in China. I can do all these things in other countries, and then I just pass laws that say I can import anything from another country. It's really simple. It's a really simple concept. And until people understand that, they really don't understand anything. I mean, it's the system of the corporate government. I mean, it's simple to me, of course, but I have all these reports in front of me, so I hope that makes sense.
Well, yeah, it does, and you don't have to read the reports to understand that's a dynamic that you can find in other places. The fact is, if you look at sustainable development, it is what's called social justice, and that is the equalizing of economies across the nations. So it's essentially the transfer of wealth. And that's why China is so resistant to call itself an advanced nation, because as long as it's not advanced, it gets to enjoy social justice. In other words, the transfer of wealth from one rich nation to a poorer nation, which it calls itself. This is just, again, corporate governance is no different. There's no different distinction between that and sustainable development, which is no distinction between that and social justice. It is what we're seeing. And it is the taxation, the progressive taxation of people in one country giving to the others, and they do it through these corporate transfers. And if it doesn't take a genius to understand the CAFR to see all that, or not to even know about the CAFR, but I did want to answer too that about the CAFR not being liquid. It's just a report.
Yes,
the contents it's not in itself anything at all more than an audit. I mean, like you said, it's an audit, and that's what another thing I appreciated that you pointed out, because I never understood what Ron Paul was talking about. These CAFRs are the audit of all the corporations, and so I found that and some other things a little troubling with Ron Paul about what's going on. And anyway, without getting off on that, but so here we have a report that just explains that the holdings are. Government holds all these. Now, I don't know. I necessarily agree that the government owns the land necessarily, but there's a veneer of authority called the mortgage system, and then we have another one now that was invented called the investment contract. And my thought is, if people would understand this soil, this law of soil, and who actually owns it, they probably have a little bit more power. Because if anybody who does the research, they'll find out that the government can't take the soil. But they can impose civilly upon the contract that is purportedly done with all with a meeting of the minds, and that's partly what you're doing. You're undercutting that presumption when you say that the other party committed a fraud, and that's what Vicky Barker is going through, and a lot of other people. Is that's the first thing I help to suggest, is that you have to assert that the people that are tied in, these corporations that are tied in, which are given sanction by government to do this to you, that what they're doing is committing a fraud. What that does immediately is it throws the whole contract into a question. So we have a way at this, and we have a way to get back to the soil. But as long as we keep our minds in this CAFR issue with the paper and what the governments continue to do amongst themselves to make the government look good, all this is just a shell game. We got to cut through that. So again, and you're exposing this, I think, is making a great step for people who may not have had quite as long as, you know, somebody like myself. You're able to bring them right on up and show them, hey, this is what's going on here. And I'm appreciating that you're continuing to clarify even further a lot of this stuff, because I think once people start seeing that it's not about buying from a corporation, it's that the system underpinning all the corporations is such that it defeats people.
Yeah, that's, and again, you know, it's just consider all these corporations a weapon. It's just a weapon. Don't blame the banks. You know, they're not necessarily the guilty party, because they're just a puppet on strings doing exactly what government wants them to do. It's that simple. I mean, it's just all these corporations are just arms of the government. So when you're talking about, you know, this boycott, this is why I'm so happy to do this show because, you know, it is the solution. It really is the only solution that we have, is to say, okay, I've had enough. I see what you're doing. I see the conflict of interest here that you own this corporation, which is why I can't even come to you, government, and say, please don't do this. Please don't put my house as a lien for a new strip mall, which is exactly what they do when they create a bond. Again, it's a weapon. These things. So if you were to actually get enough people to stop shopping at these stores and to actually create communities again, small communities, or even go back to the clan structure, the tribal structure, where everybody is family and we take care of each other in our neighborhoods and our blocks. I mean, that to me sounds like a wonderful life. Instead of passing my neighbor in the car with my window rolled up, listening to my radio, you know, that this is the kind of thing that I really think it needs to go back to a maternal structure where this type of not even knowing, I don't even know my next door neighbor, honestly. I've tried and he's so elusive that I can't even meet him. I don't think that is any healthy kind of way to live. And so the boycott idea, as far as what I've researched and everything, all the possibilities that I've looked into, that is absolutely the first and possibly final step into fixing the problem. And I'm sorry, but that includes government. It includes boycotting government. That means taxes. If you're not being represented, which you aren't anywhere, through your taxes, through your representatives, obviously you need to boycott that structure. I mean, it only makes sense, really.
Well, and that, you bring up, we always do, in the discussion here between, you go through a ton of things that are topics, subject matter, that we could go on and talk a lot about to bring people back to the idea. In some regard, we have it, like you said, right off the bat, don't blame banks. No, that's right. We have to blame ourselves if there's a blame at all. We have to take responsibility to the fact that we've allowed that, and as soon as we stop feeding it, it dies. It dies like anything else you stop feeding. For as unnatural as they are, corporations are, they will die from lack of nurture. So that's all we have to do is restrict. Then you talk about coming back to a clan attitude. And I find myself particularly blessed to be in a position of looking at the mining law. It's a very bright line to property rights. It's a very bright line to social organization. It's a very bright line to people that did that, not governments. Again, the miner is a very special class of people historically. And the more I read about it, the more appreciative I am of miners, well, generally, even if I wasn't one. But I want to, let me finish here. But the social structure that the miner created was when he was an outlaw in this country of America. And he still created a social structure that, amongst his own structure, he wanted peace. And amongst the peace that they had, they wanted to still create wealth and have a life that was, at least amongst themselves, beneficial for themselves. So they went and they turned to themselves in the time when they were considered outlaws. And think about today, the microcosm of the miner being the macrocosm of America. The people are considered, presumed by a very small group of people in government right now, as terrorists. Absolutely absurd. But there's no way this government, so-called, is going to represent those people. And you're right. When you're not represented, you have to turn to yourself. And I think this is what part of the United We Strike mission is all about. And this is this is a fascinating thing to me, is this is a global movement that way. All people have to do this.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'd very much like to get you. I actually am fortunate enough to guest host on my local AM station here every once in a while. And one of these days, I'd really like to get you on and talk about this, these mining, these claims and everything. I think that would be a fascinating topic, and it's something I haven't really had a chance to look into, and I believe you're absolutely correct that combined with a couple of other things are, again, a massive solution for the problem of, you know, government thinking that they own everything, you know, we have. Now, I have to say, I gotta see if I can pull this up, but one of the myths I've also been trying to dispel is, well, there's two of them actually, and one is that money is just printed out of thin air. Now, that's been one that I've listened to over and over from radio show hosts to G. Edward Griffin to all these people. And I got to say, you know, after I read a document that pointed to specific instances in history where that just isn't true. I'm going to pull that report up before I speak of it so I can quote directly from it. So go ahead, Hal.
Well, I would just my thought on that, I think I've even used that. My context, though, in using money printed out of thin air is that they never really tell you when you ask. And I guess my problem with government today is that when you ask them a question, they don't give you an answer, or they give you a lie or something like that. My context, I think I've used that printed out of thin air from the context that they don't give you the knowledge of where this system, how this system really works. Your video, Corporation Nation, exposes how that system works. And when you find out, as what you're talking about today, when it extends over into every aspect of everyone's life, why they wouldn't want to tell you about this, it's just reminiscent of what's going on behind the scenes of what I do with giving my knowledge to people of how to proceed in their cases against the government in lots of aspects. I'm not, when I say that we need to get to the soil and discuss these things, I'm not joking, and at that point it doesn't matter where they print it and how they print it. The bottom line is the government has a limit, and when you find out it doesn't include the soil that's been disposed, wow, I mean, we got a real big deal. And I want to just suggest to people, you may hear Ricky Barker running into problems, but you understand, you have to understand, she is beginning with her sister to prevail because they focus their attention on this. This is not hocus pocus. No different than when I suggest to somebody to go to the United States Court of Federal Claims, you bring your patent, you bring your as patent right, and you say the government didn't honor its patent to the land that it's supposed to give me, and it attacked me. I'm telling you, folks, you have a whole different idea about how to get after this. And it's just phenomenal to watch the dancing around that all of a sudden starts to happen. And all of a sudden you get your extensions of time. And all of a sudden you embarrass the judge for not paying attention to the law that they forgot. And there's a remedy to all this, but it means that we have to step up. We have to stop thinking in the way we are told by government. The news you hear today, unless it's on some of the maybe broadcasts like maybe I would do on Oracle Broadcasting, most of the news, certainly the mainstream media, it's public, it's government notice. It's the stuff they want you to know. And in the tidbits of it are truths. So you keep tagging. They keep the hook in you by putting certain truths in. When you see when you finally get a magic decoder ring and you realize it's pretty much mostly a bunch of lies, that they're ultimately the goal is to get you to be deceived or put you back to sleep. You also do not then assert your property in the proper way. You don't address these agencies. You don't do these. I call agencies, I call the courts agencies. And I say that particularly because we have just, in one of the discussions, we have just entered that into the Court of Claims. And looks like we have just put a big stick in the spokes because the government is self-serving. We have that argument right now before the government itself. And it's in a court that's also an agency of the government. So inequity, and remember, equity in the absence of equity's definition is it's the absence of law. Equity exists in the absence of law. These are equity courts at that level. And inequity, there's another maxim that says that no party is supposed to determine its own claim. And right off the bat, those two things should tell you that, well, if the government had an honor to uphold in its grants to people through patents or of whatever nation, disposals, and then you have to go to them when they have breached the trust of that, aren't they in equity trying to decide their own claim? And isn't this whole thing then a fraud? And once you start seeing that, once you start understanding these basic notions that we've been told are really a lie, it allows you, and I guess this is the biggest blessing, I think, once you finally break free, the ring does come out of your nose, it allows you to start thinking again. You have to. You start having to look at your life. And that's why I get back to the mining law. I have now a tangent. I'm a miner. I have a claim. I'm into it. In fact, the government tries to steal it all the time. And we're rectifying that over time. It takes a while. But when I got into this and I started looking at it, broke and pulled the ring out of my nose. And folks, I'm asking you all to pull that ring out. figure out a way to get it done. Listen to people like Clint. Watch his video, CorporationNation.com. If you can, come over to Oracle Broadcasting. I'll be on noon o'clock Pacific every Sunday. We try to bring you the decoder ring that shows you pull that ring out of your nose, and now you're free to think again. And this mining law gives me a view back to the people 150 years ago that did it when they were outlaws. And that is, I think, we need to see a fresh view. And it's interesting. We have to go to our elders to do that. And so this coming up with clan or tribal ideas is really impressive to me, because what they're trying to do, folks, I'm just going to tell you, this is a truth that absolutely worked. Having the knowledge of this has absolutely saved the mining law in this country, in America. I absolutely know that. That what they're trying to do, generation by generation, is to get you to forget. You lose the memory of your ancestry. You lose the memory of your history. And when they get your one generation to forget, it's lost. And I was able to be in a position that I would reach back to my minor elders and pull back and listen to what they had done and said, and said, wow, they did that for peace and tranquility. And then you say, well, that's reflecting the preamble of the Constitution. These people were onto something. Again, the mining law was non-discriminatory. You could be a little one underneath the age of majority, or you could be a woman, or you could be a man. There was no distinction. Everyone had an equal right to go after the minerals that they had to work for to go get. And so it's a fascinating view that I have tangible, workable knowledge today to help people in a lot of these. We all come at this time, but we're here for a reason, and I can't speak to that bigger reason, but I've dedicated myself to find these things and listen to someone like yourself, Clint, to say, wow, this is a truth coming out at the time we needed it, and this is really exciting at some level, because it really does empower us to start pulling this together. For as hard as it might be, and as foreign as all this knowledge is, once you see it, it's like you've repeated it over and over, it's easy for me to understand. That's right. Once you see this stuff, once you finally have the proper perspective, this stuff, it may have been a hill going up and a hard one and one that took a lot of work, but once you reach the pinnacle of it and you see the terrain, the whole picture changes. And then you become like Vicky Barker, where she's not just fighting the fight, she's actually in the time of the fight explaining to other people how they too could rise up and defend themselves from people that are just marauders and privateers.
Yeah, I think the reason that I get so excited to do to have these interviews with people like you is because my research into this and Walter's research into this, what it does is it lets you understand the enemy. You know, you can go for the sovereignty thing, which I'm fully vested in as well, but unless you understand the structure of government, unless you understand your enemy and what powers it, what empowers it, you cannot defeat it. You cannot mount a surpassable battle without really understanding your enemy. And so that's why I think that you and me and other combinations of guests and hosts and all that, when we get together, we can really, really, really pound this thing out, because again, you can't succeed without this knowledge, and I can't succeed without the law, knowing that natural common law. And these two things, when you get a grasp, I think, on both of them, and, of course, you far surpassed me on this, but, together we're so powerful with this information. It sounds kind of hokey, but, like I said, understanding your enemy is just so important. Now, What I want to bring up, and this goes back to what I just said, you also need to understand how your enemy thinks and what your enemy thinks about you. And when I say enemy, I wholeheartedly am saying government, okay? Because it is not your representative. I think we've proved that pretty much without a doubt. So what the government thinks and what is written in congressional record is what's really important, because that is what is considered, law to these people. Of course, we are common law people, but these are corporate law people, and when they act, they are acting in that corporate structure. So from document number 43, 73D, Congress First Session, says the ultimate ownership of all property is in the state. Individual so-called ownership is only by virtue of government, i.e. law, amounting to mere user. In other words, you're the user of the property that government owns. And user must be in accordance with law and subordinate to the necessities of the state. Again, that is a Senate document, and it is saying that even though you, on paper, somewhat own that property, the state owns the property, which brings the Fifth Amendment takings clause into effect, where the government can actually take your home anytime they want to, as long as they pay you a price for it. The second quote, which is back to the money issue, this is from Congressman Patman, speaking from the Congressional Record of March 9, 1933, referring to the Act of March 9, 1933, a very important thing for all you out there to go and read this act and see what happened, and also look up the War Powers Act by a guy named Eugene Schroeder. The quote is, again, from Congressional Record, "The money will be worth 100 cents on the dollar because it is backed by the credit of the nation. It will represent a mortgage on all the homes and other property of all the people in the nation." Again, it will represent, the money will represent a mortgage on all the homes and other property of all the people in the nation. So when you say that the money is printed out of thin air, this is the myth, the illusion that I want to dispel, because actually that money, again, is it represents a mortgage on all homes and other property of the people of the nation. This is law. I mean, it's Congressional Record. It is essentially the law to the corporation. It is not law to us. A big part of the Communist Manifesto is to eliminate private property, to eliminate the concept of ownership. And that is exactly what happened in 1933 when Roosevelt became president. The Constitution was actually suspended according to the rules in the Constitution, and the president was given emergency war powers. So I guess I just want to make people understand that if the dollar crashes, which is fear tactic that's used all the time against us, if the dollar crashes, that means that your home and all the property of the United States becomes worthless. So it doesn't really make sense, unless they change what backs the dollar, that the dollar is going to crash. It doesn't have any validity because, again, the United States government owns everything practically in the world. So this idea, this fear that we all have that America is going to go bust, that's not what's happening. What's happening is the banks, which are owned by government, is coming in using the fact that the government, by their corporate rules and regulations and codes and laws, or what they call laws, according to this Congressional Record, own your home. So again, what we're talking about is it doesn't matter what you think when it comes to them. It only matters what they believe. Okay, it doesn't matter if you believe in God, they believe in the devil. Okay, that's the sort of myth that I want to make people understand, because you have to understand your enemy before you can fight him.
Well, and that's absolutely the correct way to go. And I have, that's the thing about the two decades of research I've been, that's really all I was doing, was identifying, when I realized, where did America go? When the rose-colored glasses were slapped for my face, I said, where did America go? And that's really what it ended up being, 22 decades of researching, what's this enemy that's all of a sudden, I have eyeballs to see now. But Mike, I want to put a little bit of a solution, no doom and gloom, notwithstanding what you've all just said there. I mentioned a little bit about this property. You know, Mike Chambers last hour with Vicki Barker said the possession's 9/10, and then they said don't move out your house. Why? Is because you have the soil. The dollar may crash, but you still have that soil, and that's where we come from. That's the law of the land. And sustainable, you talk about no property. Sustainable development is the doctrine of no property. So it yes, underpins what you're saying. Absolutely. I want to touch something about eminent domain, however. It's true. It's in the Constitution. And I've always said, a long time ago, this became apparent to me when the glasses got slapped from my face. I started to see a lot more clear. Those rose-colored glasses are no joke. But eminent domain proves to us that we're not a free people. There's a lot of things in the Constitution that prove that the government has more power than we thought, even though we're told it doesn't. At one level, it has no power at all because it's a thing. It's an entity. It can be disregarded, and that's the people are going to have to stand up and take responsibility on that point. That's the Declaration of Independence tells us that. But eminent domain power has one defect. And it's clearly shown in the mining law, where miners who are not patented yet have what's called as-patent rights. And these as-patent rights are assertable even against the government itself, because what we're looking at is a relationship. And even though there's an eminent domain feature in the Constitution, there is a higher doctrine of trust within the government, where it became a grantor to this disposal of this land. And what has to happen under eminent domain is not just that they have a due process that they pay you for, but that what they take for is at a higher public use than what that you have. And I'm finding out that for miners, I told you it was a special class of people in that society, this is historic fact, that the miner and the miner's property has a public use and a beneficial use that the government reflects. The government then has to demonstrate, if it tries to take a miner's property, and this underlies the patents too, it has to show a higher public use than public use and beneficial use. And mortgages and property held by deed don't have that power. And so when you, again, I told you it was a veneer. So before I go, I'll let people go off, and I understand the myth, and I'm with you on that part. I'm understanding there's a other level of power here that may, for those that have eyes to see and ears to hear this, you have a bigger power, and you have to understand that what your property is, and you have to understand what your rights are underneath that. And once you have that idea and knowledge, and you can assert your property, listen, I always say, if you don't know about property, you probably are. And this is the roots of some of this. Okay, so there's I'm absolutely with you. I don't want to sound like I'm arguing on that point, but I think what we're missing on some of this is that there is an underlying power that even though the government has the right of eminent domain, in other words, it has the right to come and put a boot on you and determine the outcome. I think that because of the ignorance of the as Vicky Barker absolutely said, you have to educate the judges. You have to. The attorneys don't even understand this stuff. I have them telling me that all the time. They think I'm a nut until they actually see what I'm talking about. And then it says, wow, you guys really have this thing understood. It's the bottom line is that we have to have the will and the critical thought and the confidence to know that we're not lying to ourselves. And there's a power sitting in the soil. And if we don't abandon the soil, these veneers, these corporations have no power. And that includes the government itself. So without our we don't have any more time here, I'm sure. We got down to a few minutes. We have a power. We just aren't asserting it. We didn't even get to talk about here very quickly. You are running for president. I think it's a fantastic idea. Quickly, we got a couple minutes, and I've been told to tell folks tomorrow we're going to be on OracleBroadcasting.com, Karen Quinn Tostado, and I'm not quite sure if Clint, you're going to be there, or if someone else, maybe even Detlev might be with me, OracleBroadcasting.com at noon o'clock Pacific to discuss this in the first hour. But tell us about your presidency really quickly, and thank you for being here today.
Well, thank you very much. I always enjoy it. I'm not really doing anything outrageous, although the whole point of it is to kind of say who is this stupid kid that thinks he can be president, because people identify with the ridiculous. But you know, the whole point really boils down to I'm trying to bring Cindy Sheehan, I'm trying to bring Ron Paul, who I think is a good guy, who's just on puppet strings. I'm trying to bring all of these leaders, the Constitutional Party, the Libertarian Party, all these parties, I want to bring them onto one ticket. Now, I'm calling myself president, but really, a president should have a group of people like Edwin Vieira, for instance, as Attorney General, that can advise him. That's really what a president is. You have a staff that are experts in their field. Catherine Austin Fitz is another person I'd like to see in my cabinet. So I'm going to name my cabinet before I even start campaigning, and that is something that people need to understand, because when you elect a president, the president then appoints every single person in the federal government. No one in federal government is elected. They're all appointed by this one person who somehow we're giving all our faith to. And so what I'm doing is I'm telling you who I'm going to put in my cabinet before I even start. And
well, maybe we're going to get to the, maybe yeah, we got to get going here, Clint. Sorry to interrupt here, but we'll have to talk with you maybe next month. We tried to do it this month, and boy, we get off on this information. I thank you again. We got to get going here. The end of our hour is done, folks. I hope you have got a ton of information. Please go to the archives and listen to this broadcast and all the other ones. Fantastic what we're doing here with the Karen Quintostato. Thank you again very much, Clint. We're going to be rolling out of here and going to break, and we'll be seeing in the next few minutes. We'll be probably coming up here with talking about Schaefer Cox with Ken Bailey and Charles Irwin, I hope, from AmericanToFreedomBooks.com, Catherine Bleich, and a bunch of other things, folks, today. Thank you very much for tuning in today.